Sean Kotari. I'm a UX evangelist here at Microsoft, and I'm here with Molly Holschlag from Molly.com and Web Standards fame, and Jonathan Snook from Snook.ca. So we're hosting this Mix and Match Summit in Microsoft right now, where we've flown in some of these folks, and we're having a very, 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 very open conversation about stuff, issues, things they like, things they don't like. So let's start off this way, in case folks don't know you guys, which would be a travesty. But in any case...
That's a nice compliment.
Molly, what do you do and why are you famous?
Why I'm famous or...
Start of the first one.
Sure. Well, what I do is mostly focus on the creation of standards with the W3C, working in working groups such as HTML and CSS, working along with them. Acting as liaison between various communities, so the standards community, the spec community, the implementation communities, so really trying to solve problems, as well as doing training and education. And I am the author of about 35 books, so that's pretty much in the past for me right now. I'm really enjoying solving problems right now. I'm working with large companies, dealing with organic growth syndrome, the term that I use for these websites that are massively growing, PVC, 6,000 documents a day, 33 languages, that sort of thing. Like, how do we deal with this? How do we manage this? And applying standards at that level for management and workflow.
So you've written a book one day, a book every year of your life.
I'm actually a little bit older than I'm 35.
Don't look a day older.
Although, thank you.
Don't cry that in home. That's a compliment.
And so far as the famous, I think it's just because I'm really loud.
I wouldn't just say that. Thank you for that quick intro. Jonathan, I've been sort of a fan of your site for a long time. A lot of people actually go to your blog, right-click, and view source. What do you do professionally? I mean, I know you through your blog, and just talk about yourself.
So I'm a freelance designer developer. I used to work for a number of agencies in Ottawa, Canada. And so now I do mostly web application design and development, and then I try to post as much as I can on my blog talking about tips, tricks, and bookmarks on web development. So anything that I run into, any problems that I have, or any opinions that I might want to share, I post on the website, and it's done quite well for me.
Cool. Are you writing a book?
I've done writing a book, actually. Luckily, it is now, it is out on shelves. It is Proton Scripting. With Ajax APIs and libraries, and a couple great guys helped out. Aaron Gustafson did a chapter, Dan Webb did a chapter, and Stuart Langridge did a chapter.
Awesome people, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so what do you use like when you develop sites? Because I think the way I've been, and I think the way a lot of web designers and developers are, the best place to learn is on the web, right? You go to someone's site, you right-click, you view source, you tear their code apart. How did you get there, right?
It was really the community. You know, there's so many sites out there posting what they've learned. And because of that, you know, I've been able to use the internet as my resource, taking a look at what people have done, how they put it together. When they post, okay, here's my solution to this problem. Here's how I do a certain layout. Here's how I fix a certain bug. And just, you know, over time and experience, being able to put stuff together and saying, okay, well, this is how things behave together. These are the kind of interactions that I can expect. And through that, I've been able to get to where I am now.
So this is a good segue, actually, into what I want to talk to both of you about. One of my biggest issues, and a lot of people face this as they're, you know, getting up to speed on just web design, right? Standards, XHTML, CSS. There's no one resource that, you know, gives you the right answer. A lot of that has been caused because of, you know, browser inconsistencies. But just as a language or a set of languages, HTML and CSS are so forgiving that it's easy to commit murder on every line. What does the W3C think of that? Is that a problem with the spec or?
It's a very complicated issue. It's not so much that HTML or CSS are broken in any way. They're evolving. they're certainly evolving languages. The web is evolving. So, that, you know, there are flaws. There's no doubt about that. But part of the problem is the faulty implementations, unclear specifications. So there's ambiguities in the specs. This is my theory anyway. So the way it works is that the specs are authored. There's ambiguity in the specs. The implementers then implement separately, and they don't have shared tests. Okay, so there's no use case or test case, anything that is shared between browser developers. So everybody goes off and does their own implementation. This means if you make an error, right, different browsers will handle that error differently, which give you, as the designer, different results, and so you get very confused. And the frustration that, so it's the whole thing. It's the spec, it's the implementation, it's the implementers, and specifically, in my mind, the lack of communication of baseline behaviors. So in other words, if we're going to do some draconian error handling, then it should be consistent across all browsers, right? And this is really where the flaw is. And this confuses people when they're learning because they have to trial and error. So I think there's also a problem in education because if people are, and I certainly wouldn't say that HTML is pretty easy, XHTML pretty easy, okay? But when it comes to CSS, this is not pretty easy. When you start talking about specificity algorithms, application hierarchies, and conflict resolution, you know, attribute selection, things like that, you know, designers do not, it is almost programmatic in places. When you're looking at, like, attribute selection, and there are certain cases in CSS 2.1 and 3.0 where you have selectors that are actually conditions, right? So it's really programmatic.
It's funny that you mentioned that because my educational background, one of my degrees is in, it's called interactive media, and a couple of the classes we had to take were, the name of the class was actually scripting and tagging technologies,
mm-hmm.
So they taught you XHTML and CSS and all that
Interesting.
Stuff.
Interesting, yeah.
I cannot. It's all these art kits, right? And you know, I'm a dual degree in computer science, so it was easy for me because you know I live
you
in
have
code.
The technology
yeah.
background.
But all these art kits came in, and man, they XHTML was fine. The
yeah,
because
it makes sense.
That,
it's declarative, but
it's like,
but it's not that CSS doesn't make sense. It makes sense. It's declarative, but the concepts are difficult. So, and some of the terminology, like I always bring up the relative positioning as a great, you know. As a great example of that, it's like relative to what? And, you know, people will think of all things relative to the browser window, top left corner, relative, you know, to another element. What it is relative to itself in the normal flow. What the heck does that mean, right? So this kind of thing, it gets a little intense.
Last minute, I'm going to talk there.
So complexity of CSS and the languages and the issue of technology and design, I mean, what do you think? How do you deal with that?
How do you, before you go on to that, how do you pick between a div and a class? Like an ID and a class.
That's okay, by proper usage.
Yeah.
An ID is a unique identifier used one time per document.
Do you have a blog post on this? Is there one place I can point people to and
no.
say, read this and you will get it
well,
forever?
Well, the specs. But see, this is this.
But even the specs. Because I think, I mean, what the point was is that there are so many nuances and there are people that look at the spec in different ways. You know, you ask somebody, well, how do you mark up a list? You know, is it just a simple case of just put commas after each item because it's just a list of, I mean, it obviously depends on the context. Oh, no, put it into an unordered list. Oh, no, put it into an ordered list. A lot of people say put it into a definition list. You know, that everybody approaches the problem in many different ways. What should the page title be? Is it H1, H2? You know, is the site title of H1 or H2? And people have these nuanced arguments about what's the approach to things, and there is no way of documenting that except maybe at the spec level, but I think one of the things that why HTML has really caught on has always been it's a really flexible language.
Yeah.
There is
everyone can sort of apply it
exactly.
and do something with it. Yeah, because one of my issues is every time I feel like I get it, right, I read Andy Budd's book, Cameron Moll's stuff.
Right, and then there's one
book.
Of those nuances.
There's some nuance,
yeah.
And I go, oh, crap.
It has
to
go along with training as well as experience. It's
yeah.
the only way. And that's a great, this is a great example of the draconian error handling that I'm telling you about. So the thing with ID and class, the thing that confuses people is because browsers forgive. If you use more than one ID name multiple times in a document and you're using style or behavior, it will work. Whereas the reality is it should not. It should choose the first one and then stop there because it's supposed to be a unique identifier, right?
I wish you were a search engine.
And I could just go,
I'll tell you
the right answer.
Well, I'm not saying that I have the right answers. I'm just saying this is where,
but I,
where
you know,
the best practices
I wouldn't
come
mind
from.
Someone saying there are lots of answers, but I think
yes, this
based
is
on these relevant answers,
practice.
You should pick this.
This is the convention. This is the best
for your
way.
Situation.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the other piece. It is environmental. You have to go by the context of what you're doing.
Yeah,
you're
it's
doing
very
it for.
Context-sensitive. Okay, so in a minute, do you think tooling is the right answer? I mean, I know there's this big void in education, or maybe it's not a void, it's just the things we've tried haven't completely gotten all the people to an education level that we need them to be at when it comes to web design, right? Can a tool fill that void to some degree?
To some degree. I don't think to a long degree. And the reason why I think that is, I mean, like, think of any other tool that people use. There's the more advanced a tool gets, the more education that's involved in that. And while tools can help to a certain extent, there's always going to have to be a level of experience to make those decisions. Tools can definitely highlight issues, you know, with concerns with accessibility, concerns with, you know, using multiple IDs on a page. Certain things like that can be highlighted, but it's always going to be left up to the end user to decide how that happens, and knowledge and experience is the way that they're going to solve that.
There is no tool in existence currently that I can honestly say.
She means expression.
Can
web.
Do no I mean anything you pick it.
Yeah.
There's none that can replace what a human being brings to it. So
no,
my belief is just, you know, ladies and gentlemen, master your tool.